We're in the fifth lesson in the book of Leviticus, and we're going to be starting with chapter 6, verse 8. But before we get there, I wanted to invite you to go to my website at jimhastings.org. And when you pull it up, across the top, there are going to be some headers. One says Old Testament, New Testament, some other things. And I'd like to invite you to go under the word Old Testament and go to the book of Leviticus, click on Leviticus, and when it comes up, you're going to see all the lessons that are there. The first row of buttons will be for YouTube for each lesson. The second row of buttons will be for Vimeo. Some people like Vimeo instead of YouTube. The third row is for audio only, if you want to download the audio to play in your car. And the fourth row is the notes. And you can go to the Leviticus page and copy all the notes for these lessons, or you can go to the Deuteronomy page and copy all the notes. You can go to any book of the New Testament under the New Testament heading and copy any of the notes or see any of the videos. All of the New Testament has been taught. It is there, and many, many, many of the Old Testament books are there also. The reason why I said that to you is because at the beginning of this lesson, lesson 5, there's a chart that I have made for the notes that are on the board, the notes for each of the offerings that tell you everything you need to know about the offerings. And you can see them one right after another. The burnt, the grain, the sacrifice of peace offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering. From the first verse and on through the book of Leviticus, the Lord presented these five important offerings that He was going to require the nation of Israel to observe. These offerings and their details were completely new to the nation. And even though we can find similar offerings of the same names back in that old book of Genesis, those offerings do not conform to the restrictions of what was found and the guidance that was found in these instructions in the book of Leviticus. Now, I want to note here at this point of theological correctness. When you're studying the book of Genesis and you see one of these types of offerings mentioned in some way, we should never, ever, ever apply the details in Leviticus back to those offerings. Abel, Cain, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, nor Jacob followed these instructions when making their offerings to the Lord back in the book of Genesis. They didn't know these instructions. The instructions were not given. They were not written down. We should also mention that at this point in the book of Leviticus, there are no priests in the nation of Israel yet. They have not been ordained. They have not been anointed. Aaron and his sons are there and they're hearing it, and the Lord is going to tell them they're going to be the priest, but He hasn't anointed them yet. In fact, Moses is going to be the one who is going to do the ceremony to anoint the priest. We're going to get to that in next week's lesson. Now, all of this was just, all of this about these offerings and now the laws was just preliminary information, instructions, and laws that the Lord wanted the priest. You got that? Remember, this is the book of the priest. This is the book of the priest. The Lord wanted the priest to abide by these laws and these instructions when and after they were ordained. In other words, these offerings are going to be important in the ordination process, or at least a grain offering is, and these offerings are going to be important in the work of the priest when they start doing the priestly duties. But they have no priest yet. At this point in the 11th month out of Egypt, when the Lord is delivering this book of Leviticus to the people, there's no priest yet. But that will change in next week's lesson. So with chapter 6 and verse 8, the Lord began to apply laws to the five offerings that He has just detailed. These were laws for the priesthood to follow. The first was the law of the cooking time of the burnt offering. See, He didn't tell us in the burnt offering how long it was to cook. verse number 8 of chapter 6. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the law for the burnt offering. The burnt offering itself shall remain on the hearth of the altar all night until the morning. And the fire on the altar is to be kept burning on it. The fire on this brazen altar was to rage all night and render these burnt offerings all the way down to ash. So the next morning, after the burnt offering had been there all night and burning all night, the priest was to discard of the ashes of the burnt offering. But there was a law about that too. Verse 10. The priest is to put on his linen robe, and he shall put on undergarments next to his flesh. And he shall take up the ashes to which the fire reduces the burnt offering on the altar and place them beside the altar. So picture what it is. It's time to collect the ashes from the burnt offering, which have fallen through the grates of the hearth and are down in that fire below. And the priest was to collect these ashes in his formal priestly robes with the right undergarments and everything. The same robes that he wears when he is there doing the work of being a priest. He's to collect them and he's to put them there in a bucket or whatever it is by the side of the brazen altar. And after the priest had collected the ashes from the brazen altar in the container, put them by the side of the altar, he was to change his dress. Verse 11. Then he shall take off his garments and put on other garments and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. Now I want to remind you, this tabernacle complex is right in the middle of the camp. So he has got to go out some direction through a tribal area that is camping around this tabernacle complex to get to a place where he's going to dispose of these ashes. But before he leaves the complex, he takes off the dress garments of the priest and he puts on the garments of just the regular old people, of the common people, when he leaves the complex. He could not wear his priestly garments outside the complex. Oh, I told you that ahead of time. That's going to come later. We don't know that yet, but we've really gotten the address of it is while you're there doing the priestly duties with the ashes and everything, you wear your priestly garments. But when you're going to take them outside of the temple complex, you have to change clothes. When you leave your duties at the temple complex, you have to change your garments and put on your regular clothing when you leave the complex. To dispose of those ashes outside the camp in a clean place, he had to put on his regular clothes. Now, after the law concerning the disposal of the ashes, the Lord gave a law concerning the continuous fire. Verse 12. The fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not go out, but the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and he shall lay out the burnt offerings on it and offer up in smoke the fat portions of the peace offerings on it. Fire shall be kept burning continually on the altar. It is not to go out. Now, no doubt, this law assumed that in the morning, the raging fire that went through the night would have burned down to where the ashes could be collected. But some of those burning coals would still be alive because under the Lord's order here, the fire could not and would not be allowed to go out. In fact, when they moved the camp, they had to move the live ashes and fire as they moved so that the fire was continually burning. So then as soon as the ashes were collected, the fire would be stoked again and began to rage again for the burnt offering, and the fat of the peace offerings for that morning would come on anew for the day, and smoke would begin to rise. We now come to the law of the grain offering. The grain offering. It tells us who was to present the offering to the Lord and the place of the offering. Verse 14. Now this is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall present it before the Lord in front of the altar. Now when the Lord said that the sons of Aaron shall present, it indicated that once the giver who brought the grain offering hands the parts of his offering over to the priest, to the sons of Aaron, these sons of Aaron would go to the brazen altar and place it on the altar, not the giver. The giver was not to place anything on the altar. Only the priest presented stuff and put it on the altar. The giver would bring it, he'd present it to the priest, the priest would put it on the altar. We don't even have priests yet, so this is instructions of what they're supposed to know to do when they become the priest. Then the Lord told the priest to present the offering in front of the altar. Now the word front means on the east side. Front means east, back means west, right means north, left means south. Those are what the Hebrew words mean. And we've translated them as front because that's the front of the altar, which is in front of the door, which is facing the front of the whole complex. It's got a curtain around it towards the curtains that hang dangling down as the door. You go out towards the east. So the word front means the east side. Well, a goat, a sheep, and a ram, as we saw before, those offerings were presented to the priest on the north side of the altar. The birds were presented to the priest on the west side of the altar. The bulls were presented to the priest at the door of the tent of meeting, which was in front of the tent of meeting, which was to the west side of the altar. But once the grain offering was in the hands of the priest, that priest was to take it around the altar to the front side, to the east side, away from the tent of meeting side, and to put it on the altar of the brazen altar. And the amount of grain, we finally know how much it is. It was to be a handful. Now, actually, we learned that. Now, we've already known that back in the details. But verse 15 tells us this. Then one of them being the priest, whoever it is, who is handling the ceremony for the day, then one of them shall lift up from it a handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil and all the incense that is on the grain offering, and he shall offer it up in smoke on the altar, a soothing aroma as its memorial offering to the Lord. The memorial, meaning the remembrance, the small little portion of the offering from that grain offering. He's going to reach in and grab a handful, and that's going to go on the burnt offering. And listen, when you reach in and get flour and you put it on a burnt offering, you're not getting it back. Because that grate on top of that offering where everything went was just little pieces of metal where everything sat, because the fire is burning up through it. It went into the fire is where it went. So the words, then one of them, was a reference to the priest who was on duty at the time of the grain offering. The handful of the grain with the oil and with the incense was placed there on the altar by the priest at the east side. The remainder of the grain offering, the leftover portions, and remember that part of, be it the animal or the grains or whatever, that was left over after the portion that went on the brazen altar was put there, there was a leftover part. That leftover portion was given to Aaron and his sons to eat. Verse 16, what is left of it, Aaron and his sons are to eat. It shall be eaten as unleavened cakes in a holy place. They are to eat it in the courts of the tent of meeting. So the leftover portion of this grain that is mixed with oil, mixed with incense, or whatever, is going to come and be given to these priests, the sons of Aaron, and they are to take it and cook it up and make it into cakes. And they're to eat it in some place that is a holy place in the court of the tent of meeting. where was the court of the tent of meeting? Now, surrounding the entire tabernacle complex was a screen fence. And anywhere inside the screen fence was a holy place. The whole complex was holy. In other words, the cakes made from the leftover grain was to be eaten inside the screened area of the complex. Then the Lord wanted the priest to remember that He put restrictions on the cakes made from the leftover grain offering. Verse 17. It shall not be baked with leaven. I have given it as their share for my offerings by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the guilt offering. Now, we've already covered the sin and the guilt offering. We also know this. No leaven was to be allowed to be put into the grain offering because the grain offering was most holy, like the sin offering and the guilt. You couldn't have any leaven. So the Lord said about this leftover grain offering in Leviticus 2:3, back where we studied the grain offering, He said this, Leviticus 2:3. The remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, a thing most holy, of the offerings of the Lord by fire. So here the Lord indicated for the first time that the sin and the guilt offerings, the sin offerings and the guilt offerings, are most holy also. Why? I'm telling you this now because the Lord is going to continue with these laws for these offerings. And we're going to learn the answer to the reoccurring question in our last lesson. What was done with the meat, the leftovers, of the animal after the fat was removed from the sin offering and from the guilt offering and offered on the brazen altar? Remember, last week, continually, after everything was presented, I'd say, we don't know what happened to the leftovers. We're going to have to wait till next week in chapter 7 to get to that. We're going to get to that. The answer, as we will discover, is the same as the leftovers of the grain offering. The meat is to be given to the priest, and the grain is to be given to the priest. But what for? The leftover portions of the grain offering, as well as the leftover portions of the sin and the guilt offerings, were to be ingested by the priest. Verse 18. Every male among the sons of Aaron may eat it. It is a permanent ordinance throughout your generations. From the offerings by fire to the Lord, whoever touches them will become consecrated. So the leftover portions of these offerings were given to the priest to eat as a permanent ordinance. They were most holy because they were part of a person's offering to the Lord for sin. And because it was part of the holy offering, the leftover portions were called consecrated. Now, to consecrate means to set apart for the service of the Lord. And the offerings that were set apart for the priest from the grain, the peace, the sin, and the guilt offerings were set apart for a holy purpose, to feed the priest, the Lord's servants. Now, only the priest were to consume these portions because they were the ones set aside, consecrated, set aside by the Lord to be His priest, and they were the only ones who could eat the leftovers set aside for them. By eating the leftovers, the leftover offering portions each time, the priests were set aside anew. They were continually being consecrated by these gifts that were being brought in offerings. And so after speaking about the consecration of the leftovers of the grain and the sin and the guilt offerings, the Lord introduced the law of the ordination offering. Now, this offering was not one of the five official original offerings. We don't have an ordination offering up here. We've just learning about it. It's going to be built on one of these offerings. It is new. It is a sixth or offering. It had to do with the offering required by the Lord for the ordination of Aaron and his sons as anointed priests. It was a grain offering, but it had a slight change, but an important change. And we see that in verse 19. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This is the offering which Aaron and his sons are to be presented to the Lord on the day when he is anointed. The tenth of an ephah of fine flour as a regular grain offering, half of it in the morning and half of it in the evening." The amount of the grain offering for the ordination day was the same as the amount of the grain offering for an ordinary grain offering introduced in the second required offering, chapter 2. It was a tenth of an ephah of fine flour, and it was to be presented by the one being anointed. In other words, for this ordination, the priests who are going to be anointed priest, the men, Aaron and his sons, are to bring this pint of fine flour. A tenth of an ephah is just a little less than a pint of fine flour. Half a pint was to be offered on the brazen altar in the morning of the ordination, and the other half of the pint was to be offered in the evening. It would have been better if our English translators had used the word afternoon instead of evening in our English language. In the Jewish world, the new day began about 6 p.m. with night, at night. In our Western world, that is the beginning of our evening. In the Jewish world, evening began with when the sun reaches the highest point at high noon. Here's the sun, it's high noon. And as it begins to go down, as it tips over that point to head down, that becomes evening in the Jewish world. In the Jewish world, the word day means daylight hours. The word night means night, dark hours. In our world, our day, it begins with dark on one end and ends with dark on the other end with the day in between. In the Jewish world, the day starts with dark at 6 o'clock and goes and it ends with light as the new night comes the next day. It ends at 6 o'clock. The day ends in the light. In the Jewish world, the daylight hours have two parts. The morning, meaning before noon, and the evening, meaning after the noon or afternoon. Half of the pint of the grain offering was to be offered on the brazen altar in the morning, and the other half was to be offered in the afternoon. So, what recipe was followed in the preparation of this ordination offering? The Lord tells us that in verse 21. "It shall be prepared with oil on a griddle. When it is well stirred, you shall bring it. You shall present the grain offering in baked pieces as a soothing aroma to the Lord." Well, so we've got the flour and we've got the oil and we've got it in the griddle and we're mixing it up and it's beginning to cook and it's going to be made into pieces, and you're going to bring those broken pieces to the altar. And that is how the ordination offering was to be prepared. And each half, that of the morning and that of the evening, was to be burnt on the brazen altar as a sweet aroma to the Lord, all the way to ashes. Now, who was the giver of the ordination offering? Verse 22. "The anointed priest, who will be in his place among his sons, shall offer it. By a permanent ordinance, it shall be entirely offered up in smoke to the Lord." So the giver, who was the priest, who was fixing to be anointed, or we could call it ordained, was the one who would bring that offering of that grain offering that had been cooked on a griddle. And just to be sure that the priest understood that this ordination offering and how to do this ordination offering, the Lord says in verse 23, "So every grain offering of the priest shall be burned entirely. It shall not be eaten. So unlike the grain offering that was presented, to where one of the five offerings, nothing of this ordination offering was to be eaten by the priest. It all belonged to the Lord as a sweet aroma. Next, the Lord gave the law for the sin offering. He missed the peace offering. He skipped to the sin offering. We're going to come back to the peace offering. But right now we're on the sin offering. And it says in verse 24, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to Aaron and to his sons saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is slain, the sin offering shall be slain before the Lord. It is most holy. So the key in this verse concerning the sin offering is found in the phrase, it was to be slain in the same place where the burnt offering is slain. Well, so we're going to go and review here. Offerings from the herd, that would be a bull or a cow, was slain at the door of the tent of meeting. The ram, the sheep, and the goat were slain at the north side of the brazen altar. The two turtle doves, or two young pigeons, were slain at the west side of the brazen altar. And all the offerings to the Lord were placed on the brazen altar from the east side. Okay? With this sin offering, we come to the ingestion of the offering. In other words, who can eat the portions of the meat that were not offered on the brazen altar? Because there's leftovers. Verse 26. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. It doesn't mean that the priest has sinned and is making the offering. It means that someone who has sinned has brought an offering, the priest has accepted it, and he's put it on the brazen altar for the sin of that person. That sin's been transferred to that animal and that animal is being slain in place of that person for the sin. So let's read 26 again. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place in the court of the tent of meeting. So here we find that the meat not offered on the brazen altar, the leftovers as we are calling it, were to be eaten by the priest who was performing the ceremony in the court of the tent of meeting. Just the same as the grain offering was eaten. So the whole area inside of the curtain that surrounded the temple complex, I told you before, was holy. The priest could find a spot to sit or to stand, to eat the meat anywhere within inside that curtain area. So now we come to the restrictions of that offering, of that sin offering. First, the sin offering had restrictions on who could touch the offering, just as that of the burnt offering and grain offerings. Verse 27a says this, anyone who touches its flesh will become consecrated. You heard that about the grain a while ago. The grain, the priest who touched it became consecrated, set apart. Anyone who touches this flesh of this meat of the leftovers to eat it shall become consecrated. So as a reminder, the meat eaten by the priest was consecrated, meaning it was set aside for the holy purposes. The priest was the holy purpose. The offering was made to the Lord, and only the priest were designated to partake of the meat, the leftovers. Second, the Lord gave instructions in the event that blood was splashed on the holy garments of the priest. Verse 27b. And when any of its blood splashes on a garment in a holy place, you shall wash what was splashed on. Based on the previous instructions concerning the holy place for eating the meat, within the curtain boundary around the tabernacle complex, we can safely say that the spoiled garments could be washed clean. You couldn't run out to the local creek. You couldn't run out to your house. You couldn't use soap. You had to do it. They had to do it inside the complex. Third, we come to the breaking of the pot in verse 28a. Also, the earthenware vessel in which it was boiled shall be broken. The leftover meat that was not placed on the brazen altar was given to the priest, and the priest boiled it. That's how they cooked it, so that they could eat it. In this verse, it mentions it being boiled in an earthenware vessel. We would call it a clay pot. The verse tells us how the meat was cooked for the priest to eat. It was boiled. But it also tells us that when a clay pot was used to cook this holy meat, to boil it, the pot was then to be destroyed afterwards. Why? It's a good pot. We're about to learn in the next part of this verse that if the pot was just metal, specifically made of bronze, the pot was allowed to be scoured, scrubbed, and rinsed in water. But based on that, as we look at this instruction for the clay pot, its composition was porous. The clay was molded, and then that clay was fired in a furnace. However, that pot was rough, and it was porous with pits that would hold the residue from the boiling meat. They didn't have glazes like we use today to make pots slick with a hard surface that could be cleaned. Therefore, this instruction from the Lord had to be for a health sanitary reason. A clay pot that had meat boiled in it would not be clean enough to cook another pot of meat later. In that case, the new meat would be put into a dirty pot, an unclean pot, an unholy pot, and we might even say an unhealthy pot. Now lastly, and just as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we come to the washing of the pot. Not all pots have to be broken. Verse 28b. And if it was boiled in a bronze vessel, then it shall be scoured and rinsed in water. Metal pots could be cleaned. And as is the case, the Lord wanted them to be scoured and rinsed in water before they were reused. Metal pots could be cleaned. And in this case, the Lord wanted them to be scoured and rinsed in water before they were reused. In other words, the dirty pot could be made clean for holy purposes again. But who could eat the meat of the sin offering? Verse 29. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It is most holy. There we have it. The priest who offered the meat was not only the one to eat the meat. All the male priests could eat of the sin offering meat that was boiled in that pot. Still again, the Lord gave a warning about the blood of the offering. Verse 30. But no sin offering of which any of the blood is brought into the tent of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. Remember the sin offering, some of the blood was brought in and sprinkled in front of the veil and rubbed on the altar of incense. Where the other offerings, the blood is sprinkled around the brazen offering altar outside. And with this sin offering, the blood was taken by these priests there and right there in front of the veil. And there was put on the horns of that altar of incense. And it was forbidden for any of that blood to be eaten. So the leftover blood, what was left in the pot where it was caught by the priest, that was not used to sprinkle before the veil or rub on the horns, had to be poured into the coals and ashes on the east side of the brazen altar, where they would be burned and then taken outside of the camp to be clean to a clean place and burned again. Now, as we come to chapter 7, and as chapter 7 opens, the Lord gave His law for the guilt offering. Verse 1. Now, this is the law of the guilt offering. It is most holy. In the place where they slay the burnt offering, they shall slay the guilt offering. Here we find that the guilt offerings were to be slain in the same place as the burnt offerings, all the same. The bull in front of the door of the tent of meeting. The ram, the sheep, the goat on the north side of the altar. The two turtle doves or the two young pigeons on the west side of the altar. The grain was offered on the west side of the altar. But when the priests got them, they presented them to the Lord on the east side of the altar. So the Lord here brings up in verse 2, the Lord speaks of the blood of those offerings. He says, and he shall sprinkle its blood around the altar. And as a reminder, the blood of the sin offering was sprinkled inside the tent of meeting. So the blood of the guilt offering was sprinkled around the brazen altar. And then there's the fat. And on to the fat the Lord would go. And he speaks that in verse 3. Then he shall offer from it all its fat, the fat tail, and the fat that covers the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins, and the lobe of the liver he shall remove with the kidneys. The priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as an offering by fire to the Lord. It is a guilt offering. So the fat of each offering was to be totally consumed on the brazen altar. We know that. It's been told us over and over again. Nothing is new here. However, in verse 6, he's going to add something about the ingestion of the offering. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The guilt offering is like the sin offering. There is one law for them. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. So we must be very, very careful here when we're reading. Every male among the priests may eat of it, when he's just got through talking about the offering of the fat. The Lord has repeatedly made it absolutely clear that the fat of the offering was not to be eaten by anyone, including priests. The fat belongs to the Lord and was a burnt offering for a soothing aroma. So verses 6 and 7 must mean that the leftover meat not offered on the brazen altar, it belonged to the priest who officiated the ceremony. For the Lord said, the priest who makes atonement with him, it shall have it. So notice the Lord does not instruct the priest to eat the meat in the holy place as he instructed with the sin offering. He takes these offerings from the people. He presents the fat. He's got the leftovers. And he's made atonement, and that meat is to become his. But he doesn't tell him that he has to eat this offering in a holy place, as he did with the sin offering. Each priest had a family, and the leftovers from the guilt offerings could surely be taken home to the family. Furthermore, the Lord gave the law for the hides of the guilt offerings, the skins that were skinned off of those animals, verse 8. Also, the priest who presents any man's burnt offering, the priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has presented. So just as the priest who officiated the offerings received the meat, that priest also received the hide of the animal for his own. It could be used by him and for his family. Now, if you remember, if the person could not afford an animal for the guilt offering, which we said right here, then he could bring a grain offering. And he could bring a tenth of an ephah of fine flour without oil or incense, and it could be offered. Verse 9 now tells us this. Likewise, every grain offering that is baked in the oven and everything prepared in a pan or on a griddle shall belong to the priest who presents it. Now the giver brings it to give, but the priest presents it. So the priest who is on duty is the one who gets to have that flour. That priest comes up with that offering and he takes a handful of that grain offering and he throws it on the brazen altar. And the rest belongs to him. It is the same in this instruction as it is back here in this guilt offering. So, but then the Lord addressed the owner of this grain of the guilt offering. And he does that in verse 10. Every grain offering, mixed with oil or dry, shall belong to all the sons of Aaron, to all alike. To them, the leftover ingredients not offered on the brazen offering are theirs. That's specific. The leftover grain offering belonging to those who were ordained as priests in their families. Those are the people who could consume it and who could eat it. In verse 11, the Lord then addressed the law of the sacrifice of peace offering and made additions to the ceremony in this instruction. You remember, here it is. I said we're going to skip it because he's going to do it last, and he does it last, and here we are. It's called the sacrifice of peace offering, and he's going to add 3 points to it. Let me tell you what they are, then you'll hear it again. A sacrifice of peace normally by itself. Or it could be a sacrifice of peace in thanksgiving. Or it could be a sacrifice of a vow, of peace for a vow. Or it could be a sacrifice of peace for a free will offering. All based on this sacrifice of peace. Verse 11. Now this is the law of the sacrifice of peace offering, which shall be presented to the Lord. If he offers it by way of thanksgiving, then along with the sacrifice of thanksgiving, he shall offer unleavened cakes mixed with oil and unleavened wafers spread with oil and cakes of well-stirred fine flour mixed with oil. So when a person brought a sacrifice of peace offering for the purpose of thanksgiving, the priest was to add to that offering unleavened cakes mixed with oil and unleavened wafers mixed with oil or spread with oil, and cakes of well-stirred fine flour mixed with oil. Think of it this way. It was the other items that the priest would need to add to complete the meal. He wasn't supposed to just eat the meat by itself. Verse 13. And with the sacrifice of his peace offering for thanksgiving, he shall present his offering with cakes of leavened bread. The Lord did not expect the priest to eat only meat for his meal. He allowed the priest to eat cakes and wafers with the meat. But the Lord did not allow the cakes and the wafers to be simply added to the meat at the time of the eating for the meal. Rather, portions of the cakes and the wafers used by the priest had to be offered on the brazen altar also. Verse 14 says, "Of this he shall present one of every offering as a contribution to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkled the blood on the peace offering." So here we discover that a sample of the cakes and the wafers provided by the priest to complete the meal was also to be offered on the brazen altar. And the leftovers, the leftover cakes, the leftover wafers with oil, belonged to the priest who performed the ceremony. And as far as the ingestion of the offering with the cakes, the wafers, and the oil by the priest, when was he allowed to eat these offerings? Verse 15. Now as for the flesh of the sacrifice of his thanksgiving peace offering, it shall be eaten on the day of his offering. He shall not leave any of it over until morning. So it will be allowed by the Lord to be eaten on the day that it's brought, it's offered. The priest provides the cakes and the wafers. It's offered and it could be eaten that day. It cannot be eaten through the night, and it cannot be eaten the next morning. So then the Lord added another twist that we have not seen so far. The sacrifice of peace offering could also be a votive or free will offering, verse 16. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a votive or free will offering, It shall be eaten on the day that he offers his sacrifice, or on the next day, what is left of it may be eaten. But what is left over from the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burned with fire. You bring in it because you want something from God with your hand out. That's a votive or a vow. You need something. You're asking him for something. Or free will just means, hey, it's a spontaneous. I just want to give it. I just want to give it. So if a common person brought a sacrifice of peace offering as a vow, means based on he wants something, he's asking the Lord to do something. It's a votive, it's a vow offering, it's a pledge, it's an oath. If you'll do this, I'll do this. The leftover of the sacrifice of that peace offering attached with that vow or that votive could be eaten that day by the priest or the following day by the priest, but not on the third day. If there was any of it left over by the third day, it had to be burned instead of consumed. If a common person brought a free will offering as a voluntary or spontaneous sacrifice of peace offering as well, it could be eaten by the priest the day of the offering and the following day, but not on the third day. See, on the third day, any leftovers had to be burned. So it was the same for the free will and the votive offerings. Now, for the thanks offering, you could only eat it on that day. For the votive and the free, the vow and the free offering, you could eat it that day and the next day, but not the third day. Had to be burned on the third day. And the penalty for the third day ingestion of this votive or free will offering was severe. Verse 18. So if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering should ever be eaten on the third day, he who offers it will not be accepted. And it will not be reckoned to his benefit. It shall be an offensive thing, and the person who eats of it will bear his own iniquity. This verse might bring some confusion because it says, so if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering, the pronoun his is, that doesn't tell us if it's speaking of the common person who brought the offering or the person who presented it. In addition, he also says, he who offers it, who is the he? Who is the his? Here is our answer. After the common person turns over the offering to the priest, it is the offering belongs to the priest, and no longer does it belong to the common person who gave the gift originally. It was the priest to eat because he was the one who presented it on the brazen altar, not the common person. A common person could not eat the offerings of the brazen altar. Therefore, these pronouns are pointing directly at the priest who presided over the ceremony and made the presentation. Any of the priest who eats it on the third day, there's a severe consequence. Verse 19. Also the flesh that touches anything unclean shall not be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. For as other flesh, anyone who is clean may eat such flesh. Two things are addressed by the Lord in this verse. The things that the meat touches and the cleanliness of the priest eating the meat. Now in light of these two things that the Lord has already told us about in this lesson, a clay pot that had already been used to boil meat could not be reused a second time. If a metal pot was used to boil meat and it had to be scoured, it had to be rinsed to be considered clean. If it had not been scoured and rinsed, then the priest could not eat meat that was boiled in it. Next, the priest who was not properly clean or dressed in his priestly garments could not gather the ashes from the altar. He would be considered unclean and could not eat the meat. In other words, if the priest was dressed in his common clothes, he could not eat the meat because he would have been considered unclean in his common clothes. And with that, we find the Lord imposed a penalty for eating while unclean. Verse 20. But if the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of peace offering, which belongs to the Lord in his uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from his people. That's severe. The penalty was strict. It was mandatory that any priest who ate the meat of an offering while being unclean himself was to be excommunicated from the nation of Israel, cut off from the people. The Lord continued to detail this penalty in verse 21. When anyone touches anything, whether human uncleanness or unclean animal, or in any unclean detestable thing, and eats the flesh of the sacrifice of peace offering which belonged to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from his people. If you ate the meat of the offering, and if you ate it, and you were unclean, you were to be put out of the nation. Simply eating something that was unclean while you're unclean could excommunicate the priest from his work, from his ordination, and from his people. It was a strong penalty because the only people who ate the meat of it were the priest or the priest's family. The Lord then turned to the law of the fat, and he told of its restriction, verse 22. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, you shall not eat any fat from an ox or a sheep or a goat." Here we need to remind ourselves of what the Lord considered as fat of the ox, the sheep, or the goat. It was the fat attached to the entrails, to the kidneys, to the loins, to the lobe of the liver, and with the sheep, it was the fat of the tail. And the sons of Israel were instructed to never eat these portions of the ox, the sheep, and the goat. They belonged to the Lord. But the restriction of not eating the fat of the ox, sheep, and goat did not mean that the fat could of those things could not be used for other purposes. Also, the fat of the animal which dies and the fat of an animal torn by beast may be put to any other use, but you must certainly not eat it. What other purposes could the fat be used for? Making soap? Greasing a wheel? Making something slick? You see, there are many other purposes, and I could go on and on. So this law is directed to all the sons of Israel. That was back in verse 22. Everyone could face a terrible penalty for eating the specific fat identified by the Lord as his from the ox, the sheep, and the goat. Verse 25. For whoever eats the fat of the animal from which an offering by fire is offered to the Lord, even the person who eats it shall be cut off from his people. As we can tell, the Lord was serious about this law, but the Lord extended the same penalty to eating the blood from any animal. Verse 26. You are not to eat any blood, either of bird or animal, in any of your dwellings. Any person who eats any blood, even that person shall be cut off from his people. You can't eat the blood. You can't. Nowhere, no matter where you live, you can't eat the blood. Well, in verse 28, the Lord gave the law concerning the duties of the common person. He's just talked to us about the duties of the priest. Now he's going to talk to us about the duties of the common person who brought the sacrifice of the peace offering. Verse 28 says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, he who offers the sacrifice of his peace offering to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offering." Well, sounds like double talk. But what he's saying is, no one can be a stand-in or a substitute for the giver. No one but the giver could bring the sacrifice of the peace offering to the Lord or to the brazen altar. If you wanted to send an offering, you had to be the one to bring it. It was your offering. Don't send a substitute. Don't send a messenger. So once you brought the offering to the tabernacle complex, you had to be the one who handed it over to the priest who would place it on the fire. Verse 38. His own hands are to bring offerings by fire to the Lord. Well, the giver was to bring that offering and whether it was at the door of the meeting or at the north side or wherever. And he was to carve away the fat from the breast, by the way, of the animal in this type of offering of the sacrifice of the peace. He was to carve away the fat from the breast. We haven't heard about fat from the breast to this point. This is new. And he was to present that breast with the fat cut off of it as a wave offering. Verse 30b. He shall bring the fat with the breast, that the breast may be presented as a wave offering before the Lord. What is a wave offering? Well, in this case, the breast was lifted up towards heaven in front of the brazen altar, and it was waved back and forth, but it was not put on the brazen altar. It was an offering. It was a portion of what we have been calling the leftover meat that was not offered on the brazen altar. It was given for the priest to eat. The breast, verse 31 tells us what happened to the fat of that breast and the breast itself. The priest shall offer up the fat in smoke on the altar, but the breast shall belong to Aaron and his sons. The fat was placed on that altar. The breast would have been boiled to feed any of the sons of Aaron who were present. But, verse 33, you shall give the right thigh to the priest as a contribution from the sacrifice of your peace offering. The one among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat and the right thigh shall be his as his portion. The breast was given for all the sons of Israel to eat. The right thigh was given to the priest who officiated the ceremony to be his and his alone. Now the Lord had a name for both of these parts that were given to the priest. Verse 34. For I have taken the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the contribution from the sons of Israel, from the sacrifice of their peace offering, and have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons as their due forever from the sons of Israel. The breast and the right thigh of every sacrifice of peace offering were to always belong to Aaron and his sons. Moses says in verse 35, this is that which is consecrated to Aaron and that which is consecrated to his sons from the offerings by fire to the Lord in the day when he presented them to serve as priests to the Lord. These the Lord had commanded to be given them from the sons of Israel in the day that he anointed them. It is their due forever throughout their generations. All the offerings and everything, the leftovers, it's theirs. From the day that they are anointed, from the sons of Israel in the day that he anointed them, who is he going to anoint? He is going to anoint Aaron and his sons as priests. And it will travel on down that lineage of folks throughout their generations. Finally, Moses signed these instructions as law. He signed them into law. They were already law. Verse 37, he writes this. This is the law of the burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering, and the ordination offering, and the sacrifice of peace offerings, which the Lord commanded Moses at Mount Sinai in the day that he commanded the sons of Israel to present their offerings to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. And to this point in the story, not one of these offerings have ever been observed. They've just been outlined. They have not been done yet. No offering of these have been presented. But now with these guidelines and with these instructions and with these laws in place, it was time for the high priest to be anointed along with his sons. And it will be, as we will find out, it will be Moses who officiated the ordination service and anointed Aaron and his sons as priests. And we will study that ceremony in next week's lesson.